The Medrash says that Yehuda Sholach Lefonov, Rav Chanina Bered, Rav Acha, Rav Chanina, there's a two days of what did Yaakov send Yehuda Lefonov? Chadom Lehaskunoi Beis Dira, Chadom Lehaskunoi Beis Vad, Shehemore by Devei Torah, Vishiashvotim Loim Deboy. There's a machlokes over here, why did he send Yehuda? Either, as I guess Rashi brings down, the Sakonai base Moira, base Hayra, base Talmud, but there's another mandium that says the Haskonai base Dira. So the Mefarshim asked, was it necessary to send Yehuda the Haskonai base Dira? Yosef was Mitzrayim. Was Yaakov so interested in knowing that he should have a house? I mean, he knew that Yosef was the Melech, so Fashtetzach, he would be Mesakon him some place to live. So the Mefarshim say that maybe, perhaps equally or more important than a base dira, a base hayra, a base talmud, is if someone doesn't have a security from the environment and a yiddish shtub, so then whatever is going to be learnt is not going to have that impact. It's not going to have the security because he's going to be susceptible for all the varim hayoytim min hashuk hanechnasim l'secha bayis. So he wanted a house, a yiddish shtub. Rav Meir says that he's working for the Star Cave for 27 years. So I must say that, on a personal note, I've been a shaykhis to Rav Feinerman Shlita for already the amount of years I've been married, which not mamish 27, but close to that. And I always say, you know, I had to marry someone, but the Rebbein Shem sent me to someone in Baltimore, so I should have a kesher with an Adam Gadol, the Choshev, as of Heinemann, who I've learned a lot over the years, and I want to thank the Rav for coming and expanding our Adas Adeya in Inyanim, and the Rebbein Shem should give him koyach that he should continue being Marbitz Torah B'Yisrael and Marbitz Kashrus, so that our Neshama should be Torah to be Mekabel Torah.
I'm happy to be able to speak to you today. Chosho Eilam, I'm a little bit worried because I know you're Tamir Chachamim and you may shlug me up. But I'm going to say mostly what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, and so then you're going to start up with the Shulchan Aruch. Before I start, I'd like to say that I'm going to speak about halacha, but not everything that I say as far as halacha goes is things that are actually used in actual practice when we're dealing with hashgacha. Let me explain. Everyone knows that you're allowed to keep milchiks and fleshiks in the same refrigerator. Maybe you have one shelf for milchiks, one shelf for fleshiks, so you've worked it out. One side for milk is one side for fleshing. So whichever way you worked it out, you know you shouldn't get mixed up. But in a commercial establishment, if you're going to have a caterer that caters milchiks and fleshiks, or a store that sells milchiks and fleshiks, you can't have them in the same refrigerator because you're dealing, number one, is it's a caterer is a very it's a type of a business where you've got to have something ready on time. It's got to be ready. And it's a rush. It's always a rush. And especially if you have goyim working, but even if you don't have goyim working, but most places have goyim working also, they couldn't care less if it's milchiks or fleshiks. So they're going to grab from whatever, mikol babi yodai, they're going to take whatever they need, a knife, a fork, a spoon, whatever. It's if it's margarine or butter, it doesn't make any difference to them. So in order that mistakes shouldn't happen, it's not allowed. No one, as far as I know, no one who's in Hashgach would allow the same refrigerator to be used for milkers and fleshiks. So this is an example. You're allowed to do it, but it's not done. Now that's because maybe a mistake will come about, but there are also other things which are not done when it comes to kashrus, even though maybe kashrus according to halacha, for instance, butter. I'm going to speak about butter, if it has to be chav Yisrael or not. Could be according to the halacha, it doesn't have to be chav Yisrael. Machaber says it's all in the midik hamakaymos. But still, if you are saying that this product is chav Yisrael product, and someone's going to find out that the butter is not chav Yisrael, they're going to get a fit, and they're going to want to know if they have to kasha all the kelim, the milchik kelim, the fleshik kelim, who knows what they want to kasha, because they because that was their minik, so they have right to their minik. And so in order not to, so we say that it's chav Yisrael, if we say it's star K, it's automatically chav Yisrael, even the butter in it will be chav Yisrael. So if it's not chav Yisrael, then we give it to the young Israel, they have a star D, and that the only difference between the star D and the star K is that the star D is not chav Yisrael, and the star K is, but as far as all other questions of kashrus, they're the same. So Chacham came along and they made a gzera on Chalav Akum. Now there's no machlokes about this, that this is clear, that the Chalav Akum is asa. We're afraid that maybe the guy will mix in some milk from a non-kosher animal, which is non-kosher. And so therefore, if a guy gives milk for sale, we're afraid that if you didn't see him milk it, so we're afraid that maybe he mixed in some non-kosher milk, and so the Chacham asked it. Even if the guy has nothing, treif, in his farm, there's only kosher animals in the farm, but the Chacham said that we can't rely on that. Now there's a machlokes between the pre-chadash and the pre-taya. There's machlokes whether if there's nothing, there's no tummy animals that give milk in the whole town, if there's a reason to be makbir, that you should be there by the milking. So the there was a machlokes that the pre-chadash was matrit, pre-taya asirit, and the minig ha'olam in Europe, already this machlokes before they were in Eden in America, that we knew of, that the minig was to be machmeh, that it is, even if there's nothing, there's nothing that gives treif milk around in the whole city, it is still asa, yet it has to be chav Yisrael, it means Sayyid has to be there at the time that it was milked. Now, in America, Ramosha came out with a heta that it, even though that there was no question that in Europe everyone was machmer by Indov Tova Be'edrei, but it's possible he could have brought milk from another town, he could have brought milk that was from Behemoth Tmeya, and he was mayor of it. It's possible. So even though it's a Shash Rachak, but it's included in the Gzera. But Ramosha says that in America it's a little bit different, because in America, if you call it milk, stam milk, has to be cow's milk. You're not allowed to sell any other milk together with cow's milk. You're not allowed to do that. In other words, if you call it milk stam, it has to be cow's milk. And the government tests it, and if they would find that it's not cow's milk, they would give them a fine, and they may even close them down. That's what Moshe writes in the Truva. So, since it's that way, it's a non-sadi that it doesn't pay for a person to do that. There are no animals, but maybe there are, they're goats. Goat milk is something that people do use, but it's a behemok shera. But it doesn't pay, so what they're going to, from a horse, you're going to get milk, from a chazi, you're going to get milk. It doesn't give that much milk that it would pay for a person to jeopardize that this should be a problem that they would mix in. So they get fined, or they may even get closed down. I think that even the bigger chash is that if they would find milk from a Bengal tomato mixed into the cow's milk, once that gets into the papers, people wouldn't buy it anymore. The people want milk, they assume there's cow's milk, they don't assume that there's horse milk mixed in. So that's even more, even a bigger clap for them than the fine. There was a store in Maryland, giant supermarkets. They have quite a few stores, maybe 160 stores, and there's a supermarket. So they were fined they were fined by the government. They chapped them that they did a tremendous avla, that they had the meat showcase. They had the meat there, and they had red lights shining on the meat, so the meat should look redder. Because if it looks red, it looks more fresh, so people should buy it. So the government fined them $500 for doing this. Okay, so you know, so they were happy. It's worth $500. You know, they made tens of thousands of dollars on this thing, so they paid $500. Didn't bother anyone. No one stopped buying the meat, as far as I know, because of that. Because it wasn't Mashana the meat itself; it just looked more looked better. So there are certain things which the companies will do if they get a fine. It's a business question. Does it want to pay the fine and get whatever benefit you're doing or not? So each company will decide for themselves whether it is. But if a company like this, which is a multi-million dollar company, you know, each supermarket is worth does a few million dollars worth of business every year. And they had 165 stores, you know, so $500 fine is like as a joke. It didn't mean anything to them, and they couldn't find a mod for the law. Well, the law's already from 60, 70 years ago when $500 was a matbea. Today's garnished, so there were laws from then, so they didn't. No one changed the law, so it's still the same. They couldn't find them anymore. Okay. Now, If there's a yid there who watches them when they... Well, so Rav Moshe said like this. Rav Moshe says, there's such a thing... I mean, if a yid sits is there, a yid is there, and he sees that the guy milked the cow, so... And this is the milk which he milked. Like, after he milked it, he put a seal on it, and we know that this is the milk from the cow, so it's good. So this eight echad is Neman. He's Neman, Eidach and Neman. There's no Chiddush that he's Neman. So Kolshkein, two Eidim would be Nemanim. It's a Kavachayma. It says, when we have an Anansadi, Anansadi is as good as two Eidim. Like we find, Chazal say that in order to get married, you need two Eidim, Eidim Lekumi. So you need two Eidim. One Eid is not sufficient. Yet we say that Ishim is Kadeshes, Kesem Shtav Abiyah, so the beard. No one sees that, no one looks at that. It's they're miach themselves, and you assume that it was. Or the Gemara says that even more than that, that if a woman is fits up like a Jewish woman, but then they found out she was a guy. The Gemara says Mila Tavala Lenidasa. She was probably Tavala. So therefore, it's considered a Tefila the Shenger. So where's the Edom? Where's the Besdin? Where that's you have to tell. The Torah says the fact that we know it is an Ansadi is good like two Edom. The fact that we know the with Sekhama Chazakas, two people come along and they rent an apartment together, a man and a woman. They come from Greenland. No one knew who they are, what they are, and after 30 days that they've been living like that, the woman was Mazana, we will give her Misa. Ram says, Sekhom ala Chazakas, because if they took an apartment together, the Kader Chishva Ishtai, I mean, that's all we know. Then on the front door it says, Mr. and Mrs., whoever they are, Landau, let's say, and... So that's enough to make a chazaka that they're married, even though we don't know if they were married. And if she's Mazana, we'll kill her. And if she's Makabal Kedushin with someone else, we'll say the second Kedushin is no Kedushin, don't need any get. Why? Because it's an answer. We know this. We know, it's considered like we know it. So Koshkein, so here also, well, you only need one eighth. In this case of by Chol Yisrael, you only need one eighth. You don't need two eighths. So the fact that we know that no company would be stupid enough to jeopardize their whole business, or at least they were to get a fine, they wouldn't do that, doesn't make any sense. So it's as if we know that there's from account. Well, that's what Moshe says.
Why does it have to be true by let's say you go to a coffee place, say a gas station, and there's coffee, and they have milk in a container. So there's no government regulation on the milk.
Well,
there.
Okay.
Would Moshe have to apply?
Where did they get the milk from?
So.
He milked his puppy in the back?
Let
me backtrack a little bit. It's not the pshat that every store is regulated by the government. The milk companies are regulated by the government. So the only milk that's available, unless you have a farm, you have animals, but the person who has the gas station, he doesn't... He has cars, maybe no cows. I mean, no animals.
In Amal, before they had government regulation, before they had companies, so the chash was people would get it from a different city.
Right.
And that's a bigger chash than this guy.
Well, today there's no city in the United States that's not regulated by the federal government. It's a USDA. This.
Why can he himself milk?
Why can he go
fill
up the bottle?
Yeah. So we say like this. Look, we have a right to assume, even though you don't go boss a rove by Chavisor, you can't say that rove milk is okay, because that was the takona, that it has to be vada, you have to have Yisrael Ra'ehu. If there's endo tome be'edroi, api rove, it's kosher milk, and still it has to be Chavisor. If the whole town is endo tome in the whole town, that api rov, you would say that it's kosher milk. It doesn't help. Chacham made this takana, but the where does the milk come from? Where is it? It's in a container.
Maybe the owner of the store milk
is dough.
Okay. In that case, I suggest you don't use it.
No. Why is it kosher? Is it a bigger shash that they got from a different city than it is?
There's no city in America that you can get some.
Shtelitzu, just like then we said such a vital chashash. But today he says it's just as much as a chashash.
You have a problem like that, so then if you think that's the chashash, you should not use it. But when you go and buy milk in a supermarket in a container, Borden's milk, Sheffield, I don't know what kind of companies are. They have companies which are these companies are all regulated by the government. I'm going to explain a little bit more how it's regulated by the government so you can understand that a little bit better. But the reason why this is so important is that maybe in America it is so. I know Reb Lezer Silver, he said to me about this Heter Reb Moshe, he said, he doesn't go for it. He said, Mi kamoni hayodeya, that the whole government supervision is only worth a couple of dollars. You can give a couple of dollars to the inspector, and that's the end of the government supervision. Okay, that maybe was so in his times, but now I can tell you that today it's not so. It's not easy to pay off a government inspector, not because they're so honest, but if they'll be found out that they took a bribe, the government will fire them immediately.
That wasn't in the past, no.
I don't know if it was in the past or not, but in those days, they wouldn't find out. Today, you get upset with the inspector, and he let you do it last time. Now, all of a sudden, he got strict. So you're upset with him, so you report him. Someone once came to the Beis Halevi and said that our system... a judge. He said that our system of justice is much better than the Jewish system of justice. Why? Because by us, not only is it also to give a bribe to the judge, but it's also for the judge to take a bribe. But the Torah only says you're not to take a bribe. It doesn't say you're not to give a bribe. That's what he said. The Torah says, L'sikach shachar. The Torah doesn't say, L'sikach shachar. Just you have lift neva. But there's no, the Torah only says you're not to take it. But by us, it's also to give it. So that's even better. So the base lady said, no, ours is much better. Because in the... because by you, if someone takes a bribe, he never has to worry that the person who gave him the bribe will squeal on him and say that he gave him a bribe, because he's not allowed to give him a bribe. But by us, since you're allowed to give the bribe, he's not allowed to take it. He would take it. So he would say it. So therefore, it's better. Now it's better. So the. So that's what he said. But as I said, today it's not so. It is. I can tell you from experience, federal inspectors are very wary about taking a bribe. And I remember once came Hanukkah time, and one of the caterers wanted to give me a silver pen. I mean, the whole pen was made out of silver. I said, I'm sorry, I can't take it. So he said, oh, you're like the federal inspectors. I'll leave it in your car for you. Now,
it's a common known thing. Federal government, FDA, is short on inspectors. They don't have the money to pay for the inspectors. So... in fact, in certain instances, we know meat has been gone out that should have been found that wasn't found because they didn't have the inspectors to check it.
Okay.
So to say that there's a fear of inspectors, there's less of them today than ever.
Okay, but there's...
and they're not checking as much.
Okay, so I'm going to speak a little bit about these inspectors soon so that we can understand how they inspect it. And I think that at this point they bring up will be... it will be... attended to. Okay. So the thing is like this. In the United States, there's such a law. We'll go over Ramosha's psak. Let's say we'll go over Ramosha's psak, and he says that it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be Chol Yisrael in America. He says Bnei Torah. He says it's good to be Machmer. He said he's Machmer, but he holds Minadin, you're not going to be Machmer. That's what he passed. But that's all with milk in America. But when you have a product that comes from a different country, and today there's so many products that come from other countries, like China, for instance. So then we don't know that there's... it has to be two things. It has to be a law, and the law has to be enforced. If you have in Mexico, there's someone here from Mexico, that... in Mexico, the law is just worth a few pesos. You can just pay the inspector off. It doesn't mean anything. So just because the Ramosha was matter in America doesn't mean to say that he would be matter it in every country. So every country has to be a nidden bifnei atzmo if this heter applies in that country or not. So now you know this whole scandal that happened with the poison that was in the milk in China. That had nothing to do with Mentone, but they could easily, if they could put this stuff in, they could put anything in. And a lot of the milk comes from people who have a cow in their backyard. A lot of people have a cow in the backyard, so this way they don't have to buy the milk, they don't have the money, they're poor people. That's why the labor is so cheap over there, because they have no money. And people, it's common that they'd have a cow in the backyard, which they milk, and if they have extra milk, they would sell it. And if they have a horse, they may do it also. We don't know. So you have to be done on each country whether this is something which the heter applies or does not apply. Now, as I said, two things, if there's such a law and if the law is enforced. Now... So this mashgiach has to be, he doesn't have to be there every minute while they're milking. He could, one thing he has to do, he has to see that the keli in which the milk is going into is empty and clean before they start milking. And then, or if they're going to use the keli for two milkings, then after they milked it the first time, they have to put a seal on it so that no other milk could be put into it. And then he opens the seal and they fill it and fill the vita. We have to know for sure at the beginning that there was no milk in it. What's the use of washing the cow, him milk the cows if there was milk in there from before? That we don't know what it was. So that's something important. But he doesn't have to be there every minute. As long as he's Yosef Nichnas, that means that the guy who's milking the cow is worried that maybe if he'll do something wrong, maybe he'll see him. So that's good enough. In the Star K, we have a policy, in our Chorisho. In most places, the Mashgiach actually lives on the farm. The Hakim live on the farm. We buy him a trailer. And so there's a kitchen and a living room and a bedroom. And it's nice quarters. He actually lives on the farm. So he's there all the time, and he can come any time. And he has to come a certain amount of times. But in summers, we make cheese. So we make it Wisconsin, because Wisconsin is a special state that's good for cheese. Why is that? What's so special about Wisconsin? Because there's something in the ground in Wisconsin that when the cows eat the grass or whatever grows over there, it's better for cheese. It makes better cheese. Just like in certain places, the ground is good for making grapes, for certain types of wine. So the same thing in Wisconsin is good. It's good for cheese. That's why it's the cheese state. Okay. So now in this, our Chorisho farm has somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 cows, which is a big. A regular farm is only 150 cows per erech, but this is big. It's big. It's maybe 10 times as big sometimes, and so. We have Mashgiach. Mashgiach just sits there and watches them milk the cows. He has nothing to do. He can, if you're allowed to learn over there, he can learn there, depending on the reach that's in the place. But let's say we're in Wisconsin, but we have like smaller farms where we have to get there. We don't have a real big farm over there. So so Mashgiach, let's say he's on three farms at the same time. Each farm is, let's say, a mile between them. So he's not allowed to be more than 20 minutes away from any farm in order that should be Yosef Nichnas. That's the rule we have. He has to be and see the keli where that's milked in before he starts, and he can go to another farm. They won't start milking until he sees that keli and the third one, and he has to be within 20 minutes. He can't be more than 20 minutes travel distance from any farm. Otherwise, it becomes a joke. The Yatsu Nichnas, you know, you could. I was once called up. One of my people from my shul wanted to go to a certain hotel in the Catskills. So it wasn't famous as one of these Clark kosher hotels, but they said they have to be there if it's possible. That I should find out if it's kosher or not. So this place, so I called them up. I said, "Do you have Mashgiach?" They said, "Yes, we have Mashgiach Tamidi." I said, "Okay, can I speak to him?" He only comes in on Tuesdays. Okay. So I called up on Tuesday. He said he first comes in about 12 o'clock. Okay, so I called him at 12 o'clock. And I said to him, "What meat do you use?" He said, "Well, we use the meat from Rabbi Twersky's Shechita in Denver." I said, "Rabbi Tosu's Shkita in Denver closed up 3 years ago. So what are you using now?" So he said, "Well, if it closed up, then we'll use something else with a heksha." He didn't remember what it was. So I said, "You know, this is not the type of hotel that I can recommend to anyone." All right. So that's what I'm saying, that the concept Mashgiach Tmidi becomes very adulterated. You know, I mean, Yatsu Nichnas becomes adulterated. You know, how much is considered adulterated? So that's our thing, which we made up for ourselves, that it cannot be more than 20 minutes away.
What's the fashion
of
20 minutes?
Well, we've thought 20 minutes is a time when I mean, he can't be more than 20 minutes away. That means that he has to be there within 20. He has to go between these farms. Now, in our farms where we have...
Who owns these farms? These are Jewish-owned farms?
No, they all belong to them. Abdel
Klau. What if a Jew owns the farm? Then he needs a mashgich for chatzar, or he himself could be there?
If it is... it depends. You mean why? There's tshuvas that say that even if the yid is not frum, his milk does not become chov akum, and that's why in Eretz Yisrael that they don't have the chov akum problem, because so there's Tnuva, which is the biggest company that takes care of all this. They are not worried about the chov akum because it's all owned by Eden. Now, that used to be true. They have a different problem that's just over the milk, and that is milking on Shabbos. Because the, you know, how to milk on Shabbos, milking is an av malacha, chaylev. Now, the question is that there are mutadiga ways how to milk a cow on Shabbos. Chaznish says that if you put on the pump on a Shabbos clock, the pump should go on at a certain time, and you put the pump onto the cow before the Shabbos clock goes on, so it's only a groma. And he says that even though groma normally is us on Shabbos, but it's mokum sav al chayim, because it's a sav for the animal, if you don't do it, so then you could use that milk. That's what Chaznish was makel. Now, I'm not exactly sure how it works, because I don't see how you can put the pump onto the cow if there's no vacuum. I don't see how it'll stick on, but I guess there must be some way how to do it. Pun?
Hold it right before
yeah.
It's fixed.
Yeah, maybe you could hold it. That's good if you have one cow, but if you have 50 cows, you know, it's not so easy.
Why would it be okay
if the prisoner had a problem? It's the Gzeira. They only made a Gzeira on Cholav Akum. It's because there's Shash Meir mixed in. I mean, if it's Yidden, they didn't make a gzeir on them. So, but the truth is that in Eretz Yisrael, they also, after the 67 war, they also have a problem of Chov Akum, because in the north, in the Galil, they have farms which belong to Arabs, and so they don't have a Shabbos problem over there, because they're Goyim. But they do have a Chov Akum problem. So the frum people already worked it out, not to buy from that milk, to track down which milk it is. As I say, they have their problems, we have our problems. But there's this...
If I can't drink it?
If a yid does a malach on Shabbos, I'm a vashel for Shabbos, also layla olam, no, you don't need b'chdei she'asu, only if it is a guy. But if a yid does it, there's no din b'chdei she'asu. So that's me'ikah din. But in Eretz Yisrael, they don't. The yid will never learn a lesson if you buy matzah Shabbos. So they don't like to use it at all. It's definitely hidden not to use it. It's just like you've probably seen the Sfarim Nidfas on Nayar Shein Baich Shashchel Shabbos. You ever seen that in a Sefer that comes out of Eretz Yisrael? The same thing, that if they, even though that there's, the chances are 1 in 7 that this was, that they made it on Shabbos, and so the chances are that it wasn't made on Shabbos, but they don't want to buy from someone who keeps his place open on Shabbos, and so they don't use it b'chal.
At what point does it become Chol of Akum if the Mashgiach is not doing his job?
If the Mashgiach is not doing his job, it becomes Chol of Akum. Okay, that's also a good question. I'm going to address that question. Okay. Now, the... now, it says in the Shulchan Aruch that even a cotton or a katana, if they're 9 years old, are good enough to be mashgiach for Chol Yisrael. Why? Because if the guy will bring a milk from a different animal, these at 9 years old, they're smart enough to go and tell whoever sent them to be the Mashgiach that this is what happened. So he's Mirsas. It doesn't help Teres Eders, it helps with Teres Mirsas. They wouldn't do it. And Mirsas alone is good enough. It's good enough. I remember I was once Mashgiach. I remember being a Mashgiach for Chov Yisrael when I was 9 or 10 years old. I remember that. But later, when I was a very young man, that was after that, I was once in a farm and I was checking it over, and there was one animal over there that was something different about it. It didn't look like all the rest of the cows. So I couldn't put my finger on it exactly what's different about it, but I knew that it wasn't a cow. And it was together with all these other cows. So I asked the Balabas, the guy, I said, "What kind of animal is this?" He said, "It's a bull." You can't. a bull is a male cow. Okay. Okay. Now it says in the Shulchan Aruch that a cheese, the Ramah's matter, that there's no issa. That the Chacham made a takani, you can't eat gvinas akum. That has nothing to do with chol akum. So issa by itself, gvinas akum. If a guy makes cheese, you give him the milk, chol Yisrael. You give him the milk, and he goes and makes cheese from it. It is asa. The guy, and I'm not sure about that. The guy went milked it. You were there, mashgiach, and then you went and made cheese from it. It's asa. Kvina zachem. Why is it asa? Because mepneishma midim oisa b'arkevas nevela. They use the stomach of a calf. They use it to cause the milk to coagulate to become cheese. Why do they use the stomach of a calf? Because the Ribbono Shel Olam made that a calf. Who did the Ribbono Shel Olam make the milk for? For the calf, right? That's the primary purpose of this milk. We also can use it. What we do is that after a cow will not give milk until it had a calf, and when it has a calf, you wean the calf within a few days, and then we drink the milk. But if you didn't do that, the calf would drink the milk. So the Ribbono Shel Olam put in the stomach of this calf acid that digests this milk and makes it into cheese. Now, for those of you who have children, after the child's drank milk, if it spits it up, it starts to become cottage cheese, because the Ribbono Shel Olam has put hydrochloric acid in the stomach of a baby and of a calf that will digest this milk, and the first part of the digestion is it makes it into cheese. So therefore you take the stomach of a calf and you use that, you put it into milk, and it will make it into cheese. Any acid will do that. If you take drink coffee and you put milk in the coffee, and then you put lemon juice in the coffee, then all of a sudden the milk will come to the top. It'll all stick together. It'll curdle because the acid in the lemon juice is going to make it curdle. So they used to use from an eagle, from a one they killed. So it was also. So even if they didn't,
how does it have acid?
How does it have acid in it?
Yeah. What? No, it's not a live thing anymore.
Well, when it was alive, it had acid in it.
Right.
But when it died, it didn't go away.
But what keeps on producing acid?
There's acid in the walls of the stomach. It's there, and it works. Okay. So the Chacham had a takana that if a guy makes cheese, it's asa. Gvinas asa. Now, even though that he didn't use the Erkevis Novela, I feel that Midobas Basabim says the Shulchan Aruch, it's also made a takana. Today they don't use rennet from animal anymore because it's very expensive. I remember when they used to use it, there was one company in the whole world that made kosher rennet. It was called Frankenthal, it was in Bnei Brak. And they used to buy all from wherever they could get a kosher slaughterhouse that would shecht calves. So they bought all the stomachs from all these. They needed thousands of them, and they made the rennet for the whole world. So they had the hechsher of the Badats and of Landau, and there was no. At the OU and every place, the whole world, everyone gave the heksha over there because it was only one place and everyone had to use it and they wouldn't use the other person's heksha, so they had to put their own heksha on. So this was used, and it was a gallon of it. Well, it cost $140. That's in those days. You didn't use that much. You used a few ounces every time you made cheese, but it was expensive. And the trefa one was cost $12 a gallon. So it was because they had to buy it and to kasher it. And to get it, for shechita, you had to get it from the whole world. There was not enough. In Eretz Yisrael, there wasn't certainly not enough. Even in America, wasn't enough. From the whole world, they got it. Okay, so today, they use microbial rennet, which is much cheaper and easy to produce, and it's like hemidur basam. It doesn't make any difference. If it is, even though it's probably kosher, it doesn't matter. Chomer came in
asada. Where did they get the microbes from? They cultivate in a petri dish?
Yes, they have to grow them, and of course we have to look through the ingredients, and there's actually a place that will make it with Chalav Yisrael. There's milk in there also, and there's a place in America who makes it with Chalav Yisrael. And it's been worked out. It's much cheaper. It's a fraction of the price, a tenth of the price. So that's what's used. The Frankenthal company is out of business. Looks like it's permanent. They've been out of business already for the last 20 years. So it doesn't look like they're going to... I wouldn't advise you buy any stocks in that company. Okay, now there's machlokes between the Rama with the Shachantaz. What is this mashgiach by the Gvinas Yisrael to make Gvinas Yisrael? So how do you work that? So the Shachantaz say that the mashgiach has to actually put the rennet into the milk, that to make it curdle, that it should become a cheese. And then he puts it in, and he seals it up, and he leaves. It takes a while, depending on what kind of cheese it is. But what makes it into cheese, he puts it in. The Ramah's mashma, all you need is mashgiach to see it. To see that the there was a kosher one that was put in, and that Yehuda seems to go along with the Ramah, that says it's okay. So it's machlokes. So of course it's not difficult for us to work that out. It has to be mashgiach anyway. So we told him put it in. So that's not a problem. I think that everyone does that, and and that's how it's done. There was a time when the Starke put out. There was a time when Star K was not machmer on cheese that's made from chol of Akum, because Ramah says that b'dyeved, if he milked the milk for cheese, it is mutter. Why is that? Because you can't make cheese from milk of a behemoth tamea. It won't become cheese. It doesn't stick together. So if you stump take milk, already had a din of chol of akum on it, Now you make cheese from it, it doesn't help. But if lachatchila was milk for cheese, so then the Rama says the b'dieved is mutter. Some matim lachatchila. Some say some mutter b'hasim ruva. In the beginning, we're not machmer until we got fruma, and we don't do that anymore. But at that time, we put out a cottage cheese that was Gviras Yisrael, but was not Chol Yisrael. In other words, it was like this, that there's a question of cottage cheese, is that considered cheese, that it goes into this Gzeira of Venus Akum or not? So Ramosha has a tshuva on it, and he doesn't come out with a clear heta, and he doesn't come out with a clear issa. It's not clear. So we didn't want to, if it's not clear, we didn't want to do a hetra on it. So we had this milk. Now, cottage cheese, what we use, it's called creamed cottage cheese. It's set up to, there should be 4% milk fat in it. So they take the milk, they take off all the cream from the milk. So this is milk, skim milk, that has no cream in it. They make cottage cheese out of the skim milk, and then after that, that's called farmer's cheese or pot cheese. Then they mix in cream and sometimes milk into this and put it together, and that is called cream cottage cheese. It used to be called curds and whey. The curds were the curd, and the whey was what they put in afterwards, so that it shouldn't be dry. It should be like more geschmack tea.
Why should that be considered cheese? What's the shadow? Why is it?
It's not hard. Right. So now, so what we did was like this. As far as the Chol Yisrael is concerned, we on the cheese part of it. We did not make it from Chol Yisrael because it was so much Chol Yisrael necessary, we couldn't make that much Chol Yisrael at that time. But the cream which was put into it and the milk which was put into it, that was Chol Yisrael. We were there and put the rennet into the mixture to make it into cheese. So it was Gvinas Yisrael, but it was not Chol Yisrael. It wasn't Chol Vakum, as the Rama says, that it's Mutter B'dieved, and the Rambam L'Chayil, the Tshuva, is also Mata, and the Ikrei Adat is Mata L'Chadchila, to make cheese from milk which is not Chol Yisrael. Now, if you know, the Breuers has a Heksha on Migdal cheese, and they also have a Heksha on Ha'olam cheese. There's a big difference in the price between Migdal and Ha'olam. Ha'olam is much more expensive. The reason why Ha'olam is more expensive is because Ha'olam cheese is made from Chol of Yisrael, but Migdal cheese is not made from Chol of Yisrael. It is made from regular milk, but it's Gvinas Yisrael, that's for sure. I mean, the Mashgiach takes care of it. So it's cheaper because you don't need all these Mashgichim taking care of the Chol of Yisrael part, so that's why it is cheaper. And it's also based on the same heta. The Migdal cheese is based on the same heta. The Vesna Washington Heights is marked on Chol of Yisrael. But this, they were Meko because the Ramo was Meko, and I guess that was the meaning where they came from to use this cooler. You, as long as you know it was milk for cheese, that it's okay.
Why does it have to be milk for cheese? If you can't make cheese out of Cholov Meya, then it's cheese, you know, it's from Cholov Meya. Why does it have to be milk with the same cheese if cheese can't be made for that?
You're asking that as long as you made cheese out of it, it should be okay. So we said that once it had a Shem Chol of Akum on it, it's not Poker.
It's a rye,
but a rye is not good enough. Once there's a Din Chol of Akum on it, it doesn't go off anymore. So if it's milk Chol for cheese, so then you never got a Shem Chol of Akum to begin with. And I'm going to explain this a little bit better in a minute. First of all,
what's not see is that you can only make cheese out of milk from a kosher animal. Does that relate to the chewing the cud that type of milk, you know, mixes with keva, and that's the only type of pasta that you can chew the cud?
No, it has nothing to do with chewing the cud. Chewing the cud has to do with the amount of stomachs that it has, and the milk has to do with the blood. Dam nekav and asa chalav. It's a
the enzyme in the stomach that is not related to the chum and cut either.
Not that I know of. Okay. Now, it's like this. The Shach says that if the milk belonged to a yid, there is no gzeira of gvinas akum. Gvinas akum is only if the gvina belonged to a guy. But if the milk belonged to a yid, and you know that even though the guy put in the rennet, it doesn't matter, as long as you know the rennet is kosher. That's what says Moshe. Now, as far as I know, no one disagrees with that. Because if the milk belongs to a yid, so then it's not gvinas akum, it's gvinas Yisrael. I mean, it's gvina of Yisrael. There were not guys on gvina of Yisrael. The same way there were not guys on the chalav that belonged to Yisrael, even if it's not from. So who are then the Gabi, as far as the Kvina Sachem goes, they were not geyser. They were not geyser if the milk belonged to Yid. So there was one kashrus agency that gave Ashgach like this. They made a deal with the Geish milk farm that when you get the milk, it'll belong to us, the kashrus agency, which is Eden, until after you made it into cheese. After making it into cheese, it goes back to you. So since at the time that they made it into cheese, the milk belonged to a yid, and then there's no gzera of Venus Akum, so you don't need a mashgiach there at the time to put in the rennet. It's good as long as you know that they use a kosher rennet. So if all the rennet in the whole place, so you check them out, it's all kosher, so then you don't need a mashgiach, and that is a big savings for whoever has to pay the bill for the mashgiach, because some of these places, as I said, they're out in Wisconsin, they're out in places in Johannesville, where there are no Yidden, you've got to fly someone out over there every time, it becomes expensive. So that's what they did.
Is that a harama, or that's a real thing?
They made this deal. So, B'Ksav, it was B'Ksav they made it. So we in the Baltimore did not go for that because we thought that it's only a harama. Because what happens if something goes wrong with this with the cheese making? Who's going to lose the money? The kashrus agency or the company? Let's say, you know, if you have the law is that if you give a cow antibiotics, you're not allowed to milk it for 72 hours after you give it antibiotics. Because some people are allergic to penicillin and other antibiotics, and if especially babies, they can drink the milk and die from it. So therefore, in order that that shouldn't happen, there's a law that if you give an animal penicillin or other antibiotics, you're not allowed to milk it for another 72 hours after the last time you gave the antibiotics. So the animal will become gesund, and by 72 hours we say that all of the antibiotics are flushed out of the animal. Okay, so the...
There's a reason why it's not a good deal.
Yes, okay. Now, if you did give the animal antibiotics, you cannot make cheese out of the milk because the antibiotics kill the bacteria. So it's bacteria which make the flavor. You know, you need a rennet and a culture, and so you have this bacteria, and the bacteria, the antibiotics are going to kill the bacteria. So what happens if the guy who's taking care of these animals, one animal, he gave it antibiotics, and they did milk it within 72 hours, and now they send it to the company to make cheese out of it, and it won't become cheese. There's 10,000 gallons. You put one cow with the antibiotics in it, it will not make any cheese. Now, okay, so it's a loss. It's a loss of money. Who's going to have this loss? The kashrus organization or the company? Okay, and who goes to court over here, you know, if there's a court case? So we thought that it was more, it's like a little bit of a harama, so we didn't want to rely on that, so we didn't use any cheese from this company, from this hechsher. Now, how does the government check to make sure that all the milk that is milked is only from cows and not from and not from other animals? How do they do that? They send around inspectors to all the farms to make sure that they don't have any chazer in there, make sure that they don't have any dogs or horses. They have horses. They have... I remember when we started with Chav Yisrael, someone found out that on the farm that we were milking the cows, they had chazerim there. So they called us up and they said, how can you give ashgacha to milk from a farm when the chazerim there? So, I mean, the chazerim were not for milk. I mean, if they had milk, they gave it for the chazerim. They're the ones who drank milk. There was not. So I said to them, why do you think we have a mashgich there? We have a mashgich to make sure that milk doesn't get mixed up with this milk. There's the whole pshat in the mashgich. But anyway, in this big farm that we have now, we have a few big farms. There's no chazerim, not because b'shita they're against chazerim, but because it's not their business, and so it's not again small farms. They have all kinds of animals, so they could have chazerim also. But you know, we only do big farms now. Okay. Anyway, so how do they check it? How do they do that? The way they do it is they check the milk, not only to find out if the animals that are the different types of animals. They also make sure that there's no blood in the milk. Because it does happen that the udder of the cow is attached to the cow. And there's blood running through it. As a matter of fact, Chazal say, dam neka v'nasa chalav, if the blood becomes milk. So sometimes there's a broken blood vessel inside the udder and blood will come out. So if there's blood that will come out, they can test that. They'll test the milk. And they can tell, even mashu, they can tell if there's blood. They also test it for other contaminants. The government tests it regularly. Where do they test it? Not on the farm. Because most farms, except for the big ones, like the ones that we deal with, but most farms that have 150 cows, they are part of a cooperative. That they all get together and they build a dairy, which is a place where they pasteurize the milk, where they homogenize the milk. It's expensive equipment, and they condense the milk, or whatever they have to do with it, and they pound milk powder, and it's expensive equipment, and no one farmer can afford to buy this. So they get, let's say, 50 farms together, and they build this dairy, and then a truck goes and picks up from one farm to the other farm, and they bring it all to the dairy, and a few trucks are going, and they bring it to the dairy, and it's all processed in the dairy. In the dairy, the government requires that they send them a sample of all the milk. They actually have to test it there, and they send them the results of the test, and they have to send them samples. And that is the place where they will catch them if there's milk from a behemoth tamei. Do you know that if you have milk of a behemoth tamei, you have 1,000 gallons of milk, and you put in 1 ounce of milk of a behemoth tamei, you cannot make any cheese from the whole milk. It won't make cheese anymore. So and that's why it's such a big riot for the fact that if you milk it for cheese, that the Rama says you don't need it, because it will not make milk. It will not make cheese. So that's where they test it. So, and that's where how they know. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank has a tshuva in Hari Kodesh, Har Tzvi, and he says that powdered milk, there is no din of Chalav Akum on powdered milk. There were not goes on powdered milk. Now, what's the swar behind it? So the swar behind it is like this, that Chalav Akum first gets his din Chalav Akum when it's not like a chaza. A chaza is a chaza even by a guy, it's chaza. Chametz is chametz even by a guy. You're not allowed to be nana from the chametz of a goy, you're not allowed to eat the chas of a goy. It's a chasa. But Chol of Yisrael, the Chacham said that it's also is first, the Issa is first chal when it comes to Yad Yisrael. And that is the basis of this Ramah. The Ramah says that if you milk it, if you take milk and you make cheese out of it, even though you know for sure that it's not from a Pema Tamea, it is still Asa. It got a din chol of Akam and it'll stay there. But if it's lechatchil was milk for cheese and the goy made it into cheese, then there is no din of chol of Akam on it, because when the yid got it, it was already known that it was from a Pema Ksheira. So the din of chol of Akam is a gzera of chol of Akam. If there's a real chash, so then avada, maybe there's something mixed in, so then avada, it's also for the begin with. But if it's only as the gzeir of chol vakum, it's first chal when it comes to the Yad Yisrael. So Rav Moshe says like this, that... start with him. So he says like this, when they milked it, there was no din chal vakum on it yet. It's still by the goyim. So when does it first get a din of chal vakum? When the yid gets it, when he gets his ready powder, and they didn't make a gzer on powder, they only made a gzer on milk. It's not nishtana from what it was originally, even though it's the same ingredients. But if we know that there's no chol vakum, if there's no chol pemetay here, they were not gzer on powder. They're only gzer on milk.
Not a problem.
Pardon?
Baby formula is not a problem.
According to Tzipes Frank, it's not a problem. But I must say that even though Tzipes Frank says that, most people that are makbet on Chol Yisrael do not go along with this heter of Tzipes Frank. Because, I mean, he's saying a chiddush. He's saying that there were not goes on milk powder. Well, I mean, because there weren't goes on milk. There weren't goes on powder. But it doesn't say any place before this. He's just saying, menasvara. But Rav Moshe also goes along with this cheshvan, that the whole din of Chol of Akum is first chal when the yid gets it. And he says that when they test it in the dairy, it still belongs to the guy. And there it came over that there was no milk for Behemoth Tamea. And there's the Anan Sadi at that point. So therefore, when he buys it later, so there's no problem. So that.
It's
told him
that
Kenyan. Yes, told
him that
Kenyan. When it's kinder, when he drinks it, it's kinder.
Why is it in Gvina right here? The Rav said that when the milk is treif, first it gets a shem, chol of Akum. Then when you change the Gvina later, it doesn't help. It doesn't help if you change the Gvina.
Right.
You hear the Rebbe saying when you took that milk, change the powder, it does help. Why? Why is it different than the Gvina? By the case of the Gvina, the Rebbe said once it chop the shem, chol of Akum, you can't change it. Too late.
Okay, no, actually it's the exact same thing like Gvina. Because the way they're learning is that if it was milked for Gvina and the guy made it into Gvina, it is mutter, because there were not guys on Gvina, because you know for sure. So he said in a case where we do know, in a case where they said there's a law, except that we're working with Tzad, the Gzeira, so he said there were no Gzeira on powder. That's what he's saying.
It's only if it was milk to be powdered milk?
No. We're talking now, we know that there's no...
Then the Gvinah, once it's claimed, it was Gvinah,
right? Why does it mean to be milk? Once
it's claimed, it's
Gvinah,
it's not milk. So it's simply called Gvinah.
That's what the
Rama
says, yes. Right.
Even if it wasn't milk to be Gvinah, even if it was milk,
I don't know the answer to that question. But Rav Moshe says, but according to Rav Moshe, what happens if you have a Jewish dairy? If you have a Jewish dairy, so when it comes to the dairy, at that point when the dairy is kainet, it is not known yet that it is from Hema Tahira. So then it got a Shem Chav Akum, and it will not help if later them avar that it only comes from a kosher. That's what he wants to say. Well, what happened is that there's three big dairies in New York. I'm not talking about the Chol Yisrael places. The Borden's and, Sheffield's and whatever. That they make all the milk for all the little companies like ShopRite, and they make it for all of that. Three big dairies, and two of them are Yidden. Two of them are Yidden. So, well, it's not so simple that two of them are Yidden. Two of them are actually the controlling stark is Yidden, but they all have starks, and maybe it's possible that some of them have more stocks of Goyim than Yidden. It's quite possible. Mm-hmm. But the controlling stock is by Yidden, and so Rav Moshe works very hard, but doesn't come up with a clear thing to find a heter in such a case.
In what way are they kind of the milk that's being processed in their company?
Once it's delivered into their place, they kind of. When the truck comes into their place, it's their kind of.
It's their milk.
And they sell it back to
them? They're just processing it for them.
Yeah, they buy it. Officially, they buy it, and they're the ones that sell it. No, the little farms, they.
Once it leaves their farm, they sell it.
No, once. From the time it leaves the farm till it arrives to the. To the dairy, so that's a shaila. So that's the insurance company, the insured. And if something happens, the insurance company has to pay. But once it arrives in their place, it belongs to them.
They don't give it back. They sell it on their own.
Yeah, they sell it. They don't give it back.
So part of this, Ramesh has to work. Does that mean Ramesh has to apply? Is
that what the Ramesh says? Ramesh works very hard, but it doesn't come out with a clear thing. To be matter if the dairy is Jews. So it looks like that. It doesn't have to be. There's one big dairy that's going.
What does he need another heter?
Okay, so let me explain. The Anan Sahadi first starts after the government has decided that there's no behemoth tomatoes in this. The number of behemoth tomatoes. Before that, there's no Anan Sahadi.
I understand, but why does he? Sounds like Ramesh has another heter of that once it leaves the dairy, it's already into powdered milk or whatever.
No, Ramesh doesn't speak about powdered milk. That's what Stephen Frank speaks about powdered milk.
Right, so
Ramesh says that once the government has said that this is milk from a kosher cow, then it's an ansari that it's only from a cow. That's what he says. But before the government tests it, it doesn't help. So that's why it seems like a steer in the tubers, but if you know this information, you'll understand that what Moshe says is it makes a lot of sense.
So why can't you apply Moshe to the powder? I didn't understand why it's only the hard tzvi. Based on what the Rav's saying, that Moshe seems to be agreeing
because
that the powder would also be good.
The hard tzvi is saying a chiddush, and he's saying they did not make a gzera on powder. Now, it doesn't say mufurish. It just said they made it on milk. So he said milk is something you can pour out, but not, it's liquid, but not powder. Maybe they made the gzera on the powder also, on everything that's in this milk. The gzera's on everything, and the powder's in it. So by cheese, we don't say they didn't make a gzera on cheese. We didn't say that. We said that we didn't make a gzera on. If it was from the very beginning known that you can't make any milk out from behemoth tomato, you could make powder out of milk from a behemoth tomato. You could do that.
Isn't that also how they're afraid of the government? They're afraid of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That should be even in the plants.
It's not the plant. Doesn't have to worry about anything because if they sell the milk, it's not in a container. It's not anything. It's in bulk. And then not selling it to the public. They're just selling it to a processing facility, and it's a processing facility's responsibility that they're going to sell it as milk. They're going to sell it in containers, or they're going to bottle it or put in cartons. It's their responsibility.
I recently saw documents from the government, and someone told me that there's no mention on it. Of inspecting to see if it's cow's milk or different animals' milk, and they say that what the Hashem rely on today is to make sure that in those plants all the animals are Tehari. Are you aware of that?
Someone saw the law.
The documents of inspection, and there's no mention about.
Okay, I'm not sure about the doctor's inspection, but I am familiar with a little bit with the law. The law, of course, is a big fat manual. This fat about all the things about dairy, and there it says that it has to be only from cow's milk. My assumption was that they check it. I didn't know that they don't check it. But I think that the biggest deterrent for these companies is that if someone would check it and find out that there was milk from a different animal, that people wouldn't buy it.
Would that have to work if it's made in a different country also? People would stop buying it?
I don't know. So, you know, in France they eat frog's legs, and in people eat a lot of things. In America,
they would be afraid that people in America would stop buying their product if they found out.
Maybe. I don't think so. I don't think it's that. Okay. Now let me discuss something else. What happens? There's such a thing as peanut chews, Goldenberg's peanut chews. Okay, you can get them with a different name, under the name of Pashkas and things like that. So the Goldenberg's peanut chews, they also make a chewettes. The chewettes have milk in them. And they make the peanut chews, which have no milk in them. So, the question is, if you mark it on Chol Yisrael, can you use it? If you're not mark it on Chol Yisrael, are they considered milchik? Okay, so this is all part of the question.
Same machinery.
Same machinery, everything the same, and it's very difficult to clean it. Because the chocolate companies will not let you put any water in the chocolate manufacturing apparatus, because if you put in a little bit of water, it'll ruin the chocolate. So if they kosher it, the only way you can kosher it is with chocolate, and that's b'dievet, because it's like kashering with shar mashkim, which is not l'chatchel. So there's one question of whether it's considered milchik, and the other question is whether if you're makan Chol Yisrael, whether you could use it. So as far as the question of was considered milchik or not, some of the people who gave hechsher to it said that it was not by not. The milk gave a tam into the kalim, and the kalim gave a tam into the peanut chews, and Nabanat is mutter b'dievet, even though maybe it's not so big b'dievet over here, but maybe they consider it b'dievet. I'm not sure exactly how it works. Well, the mamoshes they took care of, like the first 100 or 200 pounds of stuff they didn't use, didn't put a hersha on it, and the rest of it they put the hersha. So, but it's a bigger question about people who are makbid on Chol Yisrael than there's Nabanat Yisura. Nabanat Yisura doesn't help. So, what I believe can be said over here is as follows. There's a din in Yeridea that... in your decimal Samach Dalet, Sif Tess, that there's a din that there's chalev on top of the stomach, the big stomach of an animal. An animal has four stomachs. The first one is the biggest one. There's chalev on top of it. And so the Chava says, has no chalev. So he said that in the Bnei Rhinus, that's the name of the town. They were no keter in that chalev. They didn't hold it to be chalev. So the whole world considered it chalev, except for Bnei Rhinus. So the Ramah says that even though that we are makbid on it, and if someone would cook this chalev together with food, so we wouldn't be allowed to eat it, but if they cooked chalev in their kalim, And now then after they cook potatoes in this keli that has a tam of the chelev in it, we're not makpid because hovenog baheta, since they were not opidin, they had a right to be samach on their rabbanim who said it was butter, so we're not makpid on the keli. That's what says the Rama. Okay, so now we've got to try to figure out why we're not. And this is Mamish Chalev, Chayev Karas, according to the whole world besides Bnei Reiners, where this is Mamish Isidoraisa. And Ramos says that we're not makra on their Kalim, because Hova Nogaba Heta, since they were Nogap, he didn't have Nogahat. So what I think could be said is the following. Pardon? No difference. 24 hours, no 25 hours. Now, the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Tov Pei Tes, where when it talks about Chadosh, Mishnah Berurah, the Bialach over there speaks about that Chadosh, one should be makbed even Bizman Hazah. He said some people make a mistake that they think if they're makbed on Chadosh, they're going to have to makbed on the Kalim also. And that's too much. They can't do that. So Mishbura says, no, you can be makbid on Chodesh, not be makbid on the Kalim. He calls it a Chumrah. The Kali is a Chumrah. So I want to explain what I believe is the reason for this. That even though that not by not only helps by Heta, but the Prima Gaudim says by not the Surah is only Asmi Rabbanan. Because nabanat, nesentabar nesentam, means if you cook meat in a keli, you take out the meat, clean out the keli, and now you cook potatoes in it. These potatoes you're allowed to eat with cheese. Well, no, if you cook it, there's some who say you can do it. If you're smarty, you can use it with. You can eat it with cheese. Why? Because the taste of the meat has been watered down by the fact that it's not coming directly from the meat, it's going into a kli. And from the kli, it's going into the potatoes. So that's not, but nois and tam, bar nois and tam. It's a tam kolosh. It's a weak tam, and on a weak tam, they were not makbid. So the Prima Gaudim says that's only Heta by, it's only by not the Heteira. But if you cook Chaza in a pot, and then you go and you cook something Kasha in the pot, it becomes Treif. The Prima Gaudim says only Rabbanan, because it's the same Tam Kolosh. It's the same weak Tam. So the Asmid Rabbanan. So I believe what the Rama is saying is that if someone has a Heta to cook this kind of Chalev, because his Rabbanan said it's Mutta, and he has a right to be samach on them. So the Issa Drabbanan of which is not banat, which is going to be, we're not machmer, since there is a makom to be makel over here. And that's why I think Mishnah Berurah also is saying in the Bialacha that since there are people who are matir chadash, even though that it's all the Rishonim disagree, but since there's someone who's matir, and we're talking about Kalim, it's not by not the Suris, only Drabonon, the Gabi Drabonon, you could be Samach on those who are Mata, since there are people who are Noig this Heta. You know, if there's some one person who's Mata, knows Noig that way, it doesn't mean anything. But if they're Noig the Heta, the RP Din, they're allowed to Noig the Heta, we're not Machma the Kalim. So why, if so, what did the Torah? We learn halachas of Giulei Midyan. We will learn it out. What kind of problem was it over there? Because by the tale of the Midyan, everything is not by not. Okay, it was not by not the Surah, but what was the problem over there? Was there anyway a kasha on the Prima Gaudim? So the answer to that must be because by Dava Charif, there's no heta of Nabanat, and they were worried if they're going to use the Kalim, they use Vadova Harav too. So, I'm assuming that that's why the Gemara says, even though the Gemara says also Torah El Tzeir Bas Yoma, because Ein Vinyan would be Mutter, and not by Dovacharif, there are Machmirim, but it's not the same Dovacharif as the two different types of Dovacharif. Okay, so now, based on that, if they will use the, if they are going to use this machinery for milchiks, even if it is chalavakum, but there are people who make on chalavakum, Ramesh says Zavota, and in the worst case, it is only a Mr. Shalchan. We're not really worried that there's going to be mamash from him to me, but the question is the Mr. Drabanan over here. So by Nisr Drabanan, not by not, so there's a mock to make. I'm saying this all mitzvah halacha, but we, in our kashrus, would never do something like that, because I'm sure that there are going to be people who disagree with me. And since we want to make kashrus that everyone could be happy with and satisfied with, so we never do that. We would never be samach and abanat. We would, especially since it's our day bishul, that's not so poshut, that there's dinner with abanat. We don't do that. We would only do it if they would let us kasha. Most of the time, they would not let us kasha.
All the chocolate factories.
We would not do them unless we can kasha with water, and most of the time they would not let us kasha with water, and that's why we don't give them hechsher.
All the ones under the Yiddish brands, all these ones, what are they? All the Liebers and Bloomies, peanuts.
They're
saying on chocolate and kasha.
I can't speak for the others. I can just speak for ourselves that we don't give them hechsher because we don't want to rely on Shamashkin. Now,
this is the only thing that the Sanfan is this.
No, they probably kasher with chocolate.
They're not.
I don't know, you have to ask them. I can't speak for them. Well, Star D, well, they're not Makron. No, but they wouldn't give a hechsher based on Nabanat either. They wouldn't, but they would give a heksha. They would stam. They would give a heksha on chol stam, but not. We wouldn't say that it's parv, that you could use it because it's. We're not.
It's not about the
No, it's never about the shushin. Okay. Now, whenever you're giving a hashgacha, you need siyata d'shmaya. I'm telling you, Ashgacha and Ashmaim, we need all the time. It is really, we see it on a daily basis that you need the Siyata Dishmaya. I was in a company that made powdered milk. Now, to make powdered milk is not simple. Chol Yisrael powdered milk. It's not simple because you've got to kasher the equipment. The pasteurizer, there was no homogenizer involved with this. There's the pasteurizer you have to kasher, and then the place that makes it into powder, so that it's either it's a box or whatever it is, some kind of equipment, you have to kasher it. It's not so easy to kasher, you've got to clean it. And then it goes through filters, it goes through bags that you have to put new bags in because it's very difficult to clean out bags. And it's a whole ASIC. So I asked the Baruch put this in my mind to ask this question. I don't know why I asked it. I asked, where do you get the water from? You know, is there a shortage of water? You know, there are a lot of these places, they use a lot of water for clean up. I said, where do you get the water from in your, what you use in this plant? Because it was out in the middle of no place. You know, if you're in a city, so then you put on the faucet. You don't think about it. You pay for the water, but you have plenty of water. When you get out into the where there's just fields all around, there's not necessarily any water there. So they said what they do is that they make condensed milk, and they also make powdered milk. So what happens to the water in the powdered milk? right? It's evaporated. So they get to take the steam and they condense it and they use that water for cleaning up the place and whatever they have to have. So in other words, they were kashered with water, which is called vacuum. So we're going to kasher a place that is the kasher place from Chol Vakum with water comes from milk, which is Chol Vakum.
Since that's what Chol has a din Chol, could you separate the water ingredient?
Look, you maybe you could say a pilpul to be matrit, but we want to make something that's glatt kosher. It doesn't sound glatt kosher.
The ratio is not enough to be bottle?
What's that?
It's
all from milk. All the water is from milk.
But it's just... It's supposed to be water now, right? Because you evaporated on
it
the
is water.
Water.
It is water. It all comes from milk. It's
part
all comes
milk is water.
From a cow.
Water.
All that water is chalvakum. Chalvakum water. It's pure water. It's pure water, but it has no chalvakum.
So it has bleed.
Milk is
I don't know if it has any... It doesn't have any tom in it, but it's... Okay, you're going to explain it. You're going to explain to the customer who's upset about it. We don't want it. You see, it's like a yotze min atame. I mean, it was asa. So you went and you took something out of it. Now that is, and you want to say it's different. There's in Hilchos Brachos, there's a Magen Avraham who speaks about this, about the musk. It comes from an animal, and the question is, maybe now it's made from blood, from the animal. Now it's not blood anymore, maybe it's different. The Magen Avraham says it's not different. Some say it is, yeah, different. So it's not grah kosher. That much I can tell you. Okay. I'll tell you another story. Some people are makbid that when you kasher, you have to kasher at 212.
What?
212. Okay. So the pashtos, according to a strict halacha, we say kabbalah kach poto. So let's say you have a pasteurizer. Milk is pasteurized between 161 and 165 degrees. That's the degrees at which you pasteurize milk. If you do it more than that, it'll get a burnt taste. If you do it less than that, it will not kill the offensive bacteria which we're trying to kill. So it's between 161 and 165 degrees. So to kasher this, you just have to put up the water to 165 or 166 degrees. Kabbalah kachalto, they went in with this amount of degrees, they'll come out with this amount of degrees. So there are some places where there are makpid that when you kasher, you always have to kasher 212. And I saw in the Achronim that the reason is because you're afraid that maybe it was, even though you usually use it at this temperature, maybe you used it at a higher temperature. So there's a way to think that it doesn't apply to a pasteurizer because it's set to go only at these degrees. So therefore you don't have to worry about it. But there's some people who map it. So I was in a company, and the ones who were giving the hashgacha to the powdered milk that was made over here, to the pasteurizer, they were makbid to kasher it from the Chol Vakum to the Chol Yisrael at 212. Fine. There's a little bit of a problem, but most companies do not want to put it to 212, because if you put it at a high temperature like that, the gaskets, between the metal, you put like a rubber gasket, so make it waterproof, they fall apart after a short period of time. If it's not that hot, so then it stays. So they don't like to make it that hot. So, but the place that we were at, they said that they makbid kasher it at 212. So fine, so very good if you can do that. Barbas is. So I asked the place, do you have any problem with the gaskets coming apart? She said, no, we have no problem. Good, very good. They've got special gaskets that don't fall apart. Okay, so then I was looking at the thermometer, while the milk was being pasteurizing, it was not that they're regular milk. So it said 185 degrees, the thermometer. So what had happened over here was that they had set it 20 degrees more than it really was, so that when they put it to 212, and you can see the 212 is only really 282, whatever it would be 20 degrees less. So they had done that. So you have to be careful. Look, so there's we have so many cases. There was a case that we went to a company, one of our people, and it was a canning company, and they cook up the vegetables and they can them. So the person from the Starkey said he wants to see the boiler. Why do you want to see the boiler? Because we wanted to, they only made things that there's no problem of Bishul Akum on them, like peas, which are eaten when they're raw, or carrots eaten raw. They only made things that there was no problem. But if they one day decide they want to make something where there is a problem of Bishul Akum, if we can turn on the boiler, how to do that? So he went down. So he said, show me the boiler. He says, we can't show you the boiler. She says, why not? He says, we don't have a boiler. So how do you cook things up if you don't have a boiler? The company next door has the boiler. What happened was like this, that this was a large company, a whole block long, and there was one steam system for the whole company. Well, then they wanted to sell it, but they couldn't sell the whole place, so they decided to sell one half to one company, the other half to another company. So the boiler was in one company, and this was the other company. Now the other company was made all meat and veils and trefers, all the kind of meat products, and they're in their system. And if there's anything trafe, so when the steam goes through, it makes the steam becomes trafe, everything becomes trafe. So all the kosher stuff was trafe, everything was trafe. Now there's no way that we would ever be owned on that. This whole company only makes vegetables. There's nothing over here that's trafe at all. And like whoever heard that they buy the steam from the company next door. So it was a siyata d'shmaya. It happens all the time. We have a special siyata d'shmaya. Okay, now I'm supposed to speak other things also. Let me speak a little bit about bakeries. I really don't know how it is possible to have a bakery that's bakes milchiks and pav in the same oven. I don't see how it's possible to work that out. If you have milchiks, something's going to spill over. You're not going to kasha make a libun on the oven every day. It's not really possible. If you have a separate oven for milchiks and a separate one for pav, it is possible to do that. But you have to be very careful that the pans don't get mixed up. It's really a big headache. You really need a full-time mashgiach over there to make sure that it doesn't get mixed up. There was in Bar Park about 30 years ago, there was some Yugolite who decided that they're going to make sure that everything that they eat is kosher, and they're going to investigate what's going on. So they went into a bakery in Williamsburg where they were getting stuff from. And on the table is a big box with eggs, and it says on the outside, over. So they went to the mashgiach, went to the baal bas and said, you know, this is, you can't use these eggs. These are not kosher. Well, we stop this business. We've been using eggs from the time the Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah. And there was kosher, all of a sudden the eggs become trafe. She says, but these are ova. You know what ova is? Ova are, if you kill a chicken and you find eggs inside, those eggs are called ova. So they are basis trafe, novella, base novella, so it's awesome. So he wouldn't hear it, the baal bas. So they went to the mashgiach, and the mashgiach said, we've been using eggs since the time that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah. Well, you could tell me a shah on eggs. Of course, Yiddish is what, couldn't speak any English. If they were known English, the Yidlite knew English, but these people in Winsburg, they didn't know. So they said, well, what kind of a shot? Okay, so they still weren't getting anywhere. So they went to Rav Machshon, and they said, we found eggs over there from a tray for eggs. So he got all upset, tray for eggs, so what kind of tray for eggs? They're not from a chicken? He said, yeah, they were from a chicken, but they're from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu, we'd be needing them. We wouldn't hear it either. Okay, so this is just a Maaseh Shehayah, that it's like I say that if you can't speak any English, you can give a hechsher on a slaughterhouse. You don't have to know any English for a slaughterhouse. You don't know whether it's Eifers or whether it's Behemoths. It's there are no ingredients over here that you have to worry about. But if you're giving a hechsher on establishments that use a lot of ingredients. I had a maaser, something came in to Baltimore from a supply house for bakeries, and usually the Rav stamp was on it, and this time didn't have the Rav stamp on it. So I called up the Rav and asked him if it's kosher or not. It was from his company, and he said right away, everything in this company is under my hashgacha. I said, well, normally a stamp is on it, but this time you didn't have a stamp on it. He said, what's the product? I said, raspberry topping. He says, how do you spell that? Oh, this is in Yiddish, we're talking Yiddish. So he says, how do you spell it? So I said, R-A, says, Reish, Aleph, Zion. Okay, so I spelled out the whole thing for him. So then he says, raspberry topping. What kind of shana could there be on raspberry topping? Raspberry toppings made from raspberries. Okay, well, there's monoglycerides in it, there's fat in it, there's all kinds of things in there. So that's what I'm trying to say, is that you have to be on top of it. You know, it's not, you could be the biggest Talmud Chacham. I'm not taking away from his being a Talmud Chacham, but you, if you're not into it, so then it's not so partial that you can give it to Rosh Chacham. Okay. Now let me, I have to speak about wine, so let me speak a little bit of wine. We still have a couple of minutes left. I'll tell you another story about the, we had a bakery in Baltimore that used to always get kosher shortening. Well, now they went and they bought a tray for shortening. So the shortening is used in making cake and baked products. So they sent it back. The mashgiach chapped it, sent it back, and they sent it again, the tray for shortening. So we know what's going on. I went down to the supply house, and I said, look, this never happened before. Why you know we don't use anything tray. Why are you sending it to us? So they said like this. You have to understand what's going on over here. Our workers that we have over here can't read. So what we did was that we color-coded them. That the blue one is for donuts, and the red one is kosher, and the green one is treif, whatever. But now we got a worker who's colorblind, so he couldn't. Okay, so we got to work down then. Because I would say something about the wine. Wine is a very sensitive. Hechsher. And it's not because when you take grapes and you squeeze them out, at that point, as long as the grape meat, the meat of the grapes, with the grape juices all together and has not been separated, it is not wine. You have to make hamshacha, you have to take some, even if you take some of the grape juice out, then then it has been wine. At that point, if a guy would touch it, it would become treif. So there's two ways of collecting the grapes from the grapevines. In the third world countries, they have people that go and they take them off the vines, they take a cluster, they cut them off, and they put them into baskets, and you have grapes. And then it goes to the place where they make the wine, and it goes into an auger that puts it through a machine that cuts the grapes and destems them, and grape juice comes out. In the more in the more progressive countries, they have a machine that collects the grapes. What it does is that it goes down to, have you ever seen a vineyard? They plant them in rows, like the Keren B'Yavne, like Chazal say, they were sitting in rows. And the machine goes and squeezes off the grapes from the vines. And that way, actually, what you have a lot of grape juice, because it gets squeezed off, they get crushed, and grapes. But at this point, it is all still together, and there's no problem. The problem is like this: when it comes into the company, they test the grapes, and they will pay this farmer who has these vineyards. It comes from different vineyards. It comes in. It's also to a place where they make the wine, and they pay them based on the amount of bricks that there are in the grapes. Now, bricks are spelled B-R-I-X, and that is a measure of sugar. So if there's more sugar in the grapes, they get paid more. There's that, because the sugar, it's the yeast on the outside of the grape. Do you know the Baruch Shalom, when he made a grape, it's a chachma, the Baruch Shalom, I made it. I'm trying to praise the Baruch Shalom. But it's a pleasing thing. A grape, if you ever took a look at a grape, there's like cloud, it's cloudy on the outside. It's not clear, it's not like an apple that's nice and polished. It is cloudy. Those clouds are yeast. And if you go and you take the grapes and you crush them and you have grape juice and you leave the shmarim inside, the yeast converts the sugar into alcohol. So the Rosh made that in the grape itself is all the kelim necessary to make it into wine, into alcohol. But the more sugar there is, the higher alcohol content it will have, and therefore, if you more alcohol, it's considered better wine. And even if you don't want a better wine, but let's say if you make a 12% and you want to make a 6% wine, you got twice as much wine from this 12% alcohol, then grapes will only make a 6% alcohol. So it pays for them. The more sugar that there is, the more they get paid. So they take out grapes and they squeeze them out, and they take this liquid and they test it. Now that point is a hamshacha already. You've taken out the juice from the psalms, because you test the juice. So from then on, no yeast can touch it anymore. So when they back up into the to put it into this vat, so the yeast has to pull the mashgiach, has to pull the on the dashboard, he has to pull the thing that will put the dump truck will go up, and from then on nothing can be touched by goyim. Every pump has to be put on by a yeast. Anything's moved, and the yeast has to be there all the time to make sure that it should not be a shiloh of yain of a goy. Now, if you cook the wine, it doesn't become yain nesach stam yainam anymore. It doesn't become stam yainam. So how much do you have to cook it? So it says in Shulchan Aruch that you cook it ad sheyechsa mimidasai. You have to cook it so that it's nefsim mimidasai. It's less. So pashtus, the pashtus pshat is, it doesn't help just to get it to 212 degrees. But which it wouldn't get to anyway, meaning that it'll get to 180. But you have to cook it more than that, so that the steam will come off. And if until now there was 5 feet of wine in the barrel, now it's only 4 foot, 11 inches. It has to be nechsa mimidasai. Because once you've done that, it doesn't taste as good anymore, and it's not royal in Nisuch. People wouldn't use that for Nisuch. It's bad wine. I remember I was in a wine company in Eretz Yisrael, and I told them that we need the wine cooked. They said, I'm not cooking any wine. So I said, why not? He says, we have the top quality wine, and we're not going to cook it. Because you cook it, the aroma, the flavor, goes up into the air, goes out of the air. I said, you just have to cook it for 5 seconds for us. That's all. You just need it for 5 seconds to be cooked. So he said, okay, 5 seconds, he'll agree to. But it doesn't taste as good. So that's the Pashup Shad. Ramosha says, no, that you don't have to have that. Even if it didn't boil yet, as long as the steam starts to come off, it's evidently nechser v'yadosai, because where does the steam come from? It comes from the water. So therefore, it's considered mavushal already by 175 degrees. It's considered mavushal. So actually, this is machloek between the tzeler rav and the OU. In the kedem wines, how much you need to make it mavushal. So the OU's samach ramasha, that is considered mavushal as long as it's it gets 175 degrees. But the tzeler rav is said you have to boil in order that it should be mavushal.
It has to be open.
Exactly. So if you have it in a closed system, let's say it's pasteurizing it, you're pasteurizing the wine, it's in a closed system, nothing's going to be nechsem midasa. Even if it'll get to 212 degrees, it won't be nechsem midasa.
It's a shear, but
I'm not so sure it's a shear, because I explained to you that the problem is that the aroma gets lost. So it has to get lost. So therefore, you have to make sure that when they pasteurize it, if that's what they're going to use, there should be a vent that the steam should be able to get out in order to recover. Okay, as you can understand, that there's a lot more to speak about all these things, but the time is a little bit limited, so we'll leave it at that. I want to thank everyone for listening to me, and have a good night.